all the way from Australia.
Amazing!
Jake Julius from Rattlesnake TV. He is a, he was on the Father's Day. I had him on the Father's Day. It was an amazing discussion that we had. So Julius is in L.A., so we have him on the Destiny Peterson radio show today. He is originally from Australia. He is a vibrant content creator.
Yes, sir.
Known for his fearless exploitation of controversial subject. Exploration of controversial subject. Thanks for coming in, man.
Thank you for having me, man. Yeah.
What are you doing in the United States and LA, all the way from Australia?
Well, I'm based in Mexico for the last month, but I'm in LA because I was coming to do your show and also the Whatever podcast. Have you seen the Whatever podcast?
No.
So it's basically where they get a bunch of girls around the table and then one or two guys.
Oh.
And all of the girls are like OnlyFans creators and... and then that we have a discussion, and last night was entertaining. For sure.
Amazing. How do you like the USA?
You know what? I didn't really like LA the first one or two times I came here because I was staying in more the downtown area. All and right. I travel the world a lot, and the most unsafe that I've ever felt, or like the most sketchy that I've ever felt, was when I was in downtown LA.
Yeah.
And I've traveled around Eastern Europe. I've traveled around many different places that are quite dangerous, a lot around Asia. I'd say Latin America and then downtown L.A. are the most unsafe.
Amazing. L.A., when I first moved here in 1968, was really a beautiful area.
Mm.
It was amazing. I never imagined it can turn into what it is now.
I mean, there are still beautiful parts of it. And I stay in the San Fernando Valley now. I don't mind that. And then you go up north, Santa Barbara.
Right.
But I do love the United States because it's absolutely vibrant and electric. There's great culture here. But there are a few bad eggs, unfortunately.
How is it? Oh, they need you to sit up in your...
Oh, yeah.
Sean, come and tell him. I was wondering why you look so low on the screen. You see yourself up there?
Sorry, I was chilling.
He was chilling.
I was chilling too much. My bad.
What's the difference in L.A., I mean, the United States, from what you've seen of it, and Australia?
Well, Australia is much bigger, and we have a much smaller population, so the cities are much more, like, spread out. And also, I think that Australia, in terms of politics, is much more apathetic. We don't really tend to get hit. We didn't get really hit by the global financial crisis. We don't really suffer. We haven't really had any major wars for freedom in the last 100 years or so. We're much more apathetic with politics, whereas Americans, you guys really wear your heart on your sleeve like that.
Yeah.
That's what I like about you guys.
Do they still have those little black people living in the woods in Australia?
Not in the woods, but in the desert. In the desert, it's a little bit different.
They live in the desert?
Yeah. So you've
and got... that's why they're so black?
I think it's more something to do with that, but If you go in the middle of Australia, you've got the Simpson Desert, which is just this enormous desert. And then you've got the Stuart Highway, which runs right through the center of the desert. And, like, it'll take you one day to drive from one township to another. And these people have, like no hospitals near them. And it's, yeah. It's
really?
Not where you'd want to live, Jesse. I'll tell you what.
Do they blame the white people there for their condition?
I think that the people who blame the white people at the loudest are the ones whose grandma's mother's goldfish's cat was black, and like they're not actually black themselves, and they tend to be the ones who are the activists in the street who are sort of trying to claim some sort of victim narrative. When if you wanted to really look at the problem, it would be a lot deeper and darker and more confronting truths.
One other thing about the certainly look, do they live in huts? Or houses?
They live in houses, but they're pretty shoddy. Like the conditions out there are pretty nasty.
Really?
Yeah. Well, it's called the tyranny of distance, which is, means that if you live in one of these townships and you have no access to like medical facilities, for example, like it's so far away, and if you have to drive a day or two to get to your community, then it's much harder to build any sort of meaningful infrastructure. And also, these people, they're they were a Paleolithic culture when Australia when Australia was colonized by the British. So they don't have the same sort of desire or necessity for it.
Yeah.
Like some, they get big checks, for example, sometimes from like big like mining companies and oil companies or whatever, or big natural resources companies, because it's like their land. It's hard to explain, but then yeah. they'll get big checks from these people. And then there's a whole industry of guys who go and sell Toyota Hiluxes, like old Toyota Hiluxes. They'll drive them from different states up to the north, and then these guys will buy them. And what they'll do is they'll just fill their car up with alcohol, fill the car up like head to toe with alcohol.
How do they take their money and get
and
drunk?
And then they'll go what they call out bush, and they'll take the car out bush, and they'll just thrash the car for months and just get drunk. So
wow.
Yeah.
They're called, what are they called?
Aboriginals.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So what's wrong with the blacks that all over the world where they dwell and supposed to be in charge of their own life, they can't seem to get it together. What's wrong with the blacks?
I'm not sure. It's hard to answer the question when you say that because, like, they're such different cultures. You know, like if you ask me what like the problems are with the indigenous Australian culture, I could answer you that, and then I could answer you separately different cultures. But the blacks is a hard one.
Okay, so listen. Last time I had you on the Fallen State, very interesting discussion. What did you ever go and forgive your mother?
Yes,
you did.
Yep.
Wow.
Told her and everything.
What made you decide to go and forgive her? Because when I was talking to you about it, you didn't know if you resented her or not.
Well, I do. I love my mother, and she was a great mother, and she got me through some very, very difficult times. But, yeah, I let her know that she's forgiven, and that was that.
What did she say?
She said, thank you.
What a mess.
Yeah.
Amazing. And so do you deal with women differently now that you've dealt with your mother?
I'd say that I was already pretty okay at dealing with women, but through trial and error and through having times where I didn't deal with women the right way, and then you like you learn pretty hard lessons, and then you realize that Satan is their daddy at the end of the day. And then you realize that you have to be careful, you know?
So now that you have forgiven your mother, you still have anger, or have you let it go?
I'd say that as I've gotten closer to God and as I've leaned more into faith, my anger has subsided a lot more.
Right on.
And it was something that I did struggle with in my teenage years in a pretty big way. But I'm a much more calm and peaceful person as I've leaned further into faith and trusted in God a little bit and submitted to God a little bit more and to His will.
Right on, man. So, are you doing the silent prayer? Did you get that a chance?
I haven't given I'm kicking myself that I haven't given it a chance yet because I do remember you said that, but I will next time.
All right. Amazing.
Yeah.
So do you know what a Riz is?
Riz, like it's like a short way of saying charisma. If you Riz someone up, yeah?
I'm learning about this.
Oh, so you want me to tell you?
Okay.
So Riz is what the kids say for charisma. So if you walk up to a few ladies and you want to sort of, you know, strike up a conversation, you'd want to have a little bit of Riz because otherwise the ladies will just say no thank you.
Do you have Riz?
I would say that at times I've been known to have a little bit of Riz.
And why did they take out the Riz from the charisma?
That's what the kids do, Jesse. They'll take things and they'll shorten them and sweeten them and make little trends out of it on TikTok. I don't know. I couldn't tell you why they shortened it.
I bet you most of them can't even spell charisma.
I would say so. I'd say so. These TikTok kids can't do much, Jesse.
I know. What a shame, huh?
I know.
What's important to you?
My family is most important for me and my mission, what I'm trying to achieve in life. And God would be the three things that are probably the most important.
And so you say your family, meaning you're not married with kids, right?
Not yet.
And so when you say your family, who are you referring to?
My brothers and my mom.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
And why are they important to you?
Well, because at the end of the day, no matter what happens, I know that they've got my back. And I think you learn in life through having friends and relationships and business relationships and jobs that people are very come and go and people are very fleeting. And you have to know who are the people that have really got your back at the end of the day. And my family are those people for me. And yeah, that's why they're important.
And you say that God is important to you too?
Yeah.
And how do you know God is important to you?
Well, I would say because as I've started to develop a more of a relationship with God and read scripture a little bit more and lean into Christianity a little bit more, that things have gotten exponentially better for me in my life. So that relationship that I've built with God has been important in terms of my own salvation and my own happiness and peacefulness. And it's pretty much when I'm not working or when I'm not talking to family, it's all I really think about. It's all I ponder. So
right on.
Yeah.
And so in Australia, is Christianity a big deal?
No, I was raised in a totally atheist, secular society. So
really?
Yeah, unfortunately, I went to Catholic school, but I never took it seriously. And it took me until I was about 25 to start actually looking into it seriously and to start looking around and observing the evil in the world that I was seeing around me and then thinking that there has to be an opposite. And then looking into God, looking into Christianity, looking into the life of Christ and realizing that there is an opposite and that the good news is real.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
What is it like living in growing up in an atheist society? With no mention of God, no God or anything, right?
Yeah, I think...
What's that like?
I could honestly talk for days about it, but last night I saw a really, really good example of it. So I was on this Whatever podcast, which, by the way, Jesse, if I lined up an appearance for you on the Whatever podcast, would you do it?
Yes.
It's in Santa Barbara.
Oh, okay.
Because you would be amazing on that show. Just talking to all these young ladies and teach and showing them the way. So last night I was talking to a bunch of young ladies, and look, it's not even their fault that they think this way, but they're right. Raised in such a secular society that they were speaking to me and like preaching to me that California is such a great place because I can get an abortion. And I wanted to say, it was towards the end, it was after a 5-hour podcast and I was a bit tired, so I wanted to get out of there. I didn't say much, but, and then they were feminists and we presented them with facts and logic for hours, telling them why feminism is actually an evil satanic practice and, right. And why it's actually bullshit. You're not oppressed, et cetera, but they just wouldn't accept it. And then I was trying to explain to them the natural order of the world, how it's God over man over woman, God over man over woman over child, and giving them logic. And it was just falling so flat on them. And I just thought to them, this is the product of an atheist society. And this is the ever expanding demon of liberalism and of freedom.
Yeah.
That people just expand endlessly. And then eventually it infects your children. And it's one of those ideologies that you have to nip in the bud, and it has to be shackled to something. And if it's not shackled to God, if it's not chained to natural laws, and if it's not chained to objective morality, then it will just keep expanding. And I saw that's what happens in an atheist society, is that these things just keep expanding until it gets popped.
I can't imagine growing up in an atheist society. You know, that's what I ask. What is that like? You know, like what rules do you follow if you're not following the rules of God in the heart?
Well, you don't really, because the idea of freedom is taken so seriously. And like, I like liberty in the sense that like, I like to be able to not take a certain thing if I don't want to take that certain thing.
Yes.
And I like that idea of liberty. I like the ability to be able to bear arms. I like the idea of self actualization to an extent.
Absolutely.
But liberty, Søren Kierkegaard, Danish philosopher, has this idea of freedom is the, anxiety is the dizziness of freedom. So freedom is such, like I said before, such an ever-expanding thing that if it's not shackled to something, then it just keeps on expanding. And that's the problem with these atheist societies, is that it's freedom over everything, freedom uber alles. And they don't have any idea of objectivity. And if you try and tell them something objective, like that something is objectively beautiful, or if you try and tell them that there is an objective order of the world, then they just reject it because that goes against their ideas of freedom.
Yeah, so, that makes sense. Abortion is not freedom. They think because they can have an abortion, that's freedom. That's not freedom. Yeah. Because the women who are killing the men, children in the womb, they're not free within themselves. They're not happy. They're miserable.
Mm. It's funny that I talk about bodily autonomy, but if you look at an abortion, what it is it's killing a life, because life starts at conception, and that life doesn't have bodily autonomy.
Right.
So if you want to stand there and say, my body, my choice, well, this is something that has separate DNA to you.
So. That's right. I mean, did any of the girls, did any of them catch on to what you were saying on that show?
It's this strange thing that happens where you say something that's logical and then they'll take... So I was saying to them, my idea of a good union between man and woman is that the man is the provider and that the woman is the nurturer.
Yeah.
So I want my wife one day to be able to nurture my children, and that's number one. I'm not going to be sending them off to a daycare where they're going to have rainbow flags in their little daycare. That's not happening.
That's right.
And then they interpreted that as that women are oppressed and chained to the oven. And I said, no, actually, this is your mind has been poisoned by these ideologies. And there are many, 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 many women out there who would actually love to hear that and who would hear that sort of rhetoric from a man and would think that's a strong leader. But you guys... thinking that, oh, I'm taking away your working hours. When you receive a little baby in your arms, you're going to want to care for that thing, and your husband is going to want to go out and provide for that thing.
Yeah.
And that's the natural order. Every single fiber of your being is inclined towards that way. But it fell on deaf ears, Jesse.
What a mess. You see my concept?
What is it?
That's when I used to pick cotton.
Is it actually?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is cool.
You never picked cotton before?
No. Does that make you a victim?
No, it made me a cotton picker.
Is that a little like action figure of you down there?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Amazing. Amazing. Hassan made that.
Oh, really?
That guy right there.
Oh, fantastic. I'd love one of them. I put it in my studio, a little Jesse Lee Peterson action figure.
Amazing. Yeah, Hassan did that.
Did you ever sing songs while you were picking cotton?
Yes.
Like the Midnight Special. Shine a light on me.
I used to sing some glad morning when this life is over.
Very nice.
So I got to ask, what do you think about, what's your opinion on public display of affection?
I'm against public display of affection in my own relationships.
Yeah.
And I'm actually virulently anti-public affection when it comes to kissing and those sorts of things.
Yeah.
Literally 2 nights ago, my brother and I were at a restaurant, and this couple was just eating each other's faces the entire time that we were there. And it's the most disgusting, repulsive thing. I don't know how you can sit there while other people are trying to eat and drink and be eating each other's faces off.
They do it for the thrill of it, because when you're doing it in the public, they look around to make sure other people are looking at them, and they get a thrill from it.
Yeah.
Like an ego feeling like, oh, they're in love or something, you know. They get a thrill from it. That's why they do it.
I think it's a thrill, but it's also just being drunk on your own fumes.
Absolutely.
Because you think I'm in love and the world needs to stop because I now found someone that I'm in love with, and look at me being in love.
Yeah.
No one cares.
Do we have that picture, Hassan, of Tim Scott proposing?
Tim Scott.
You know who Tim Scott is?
Yeah, I do. He just got engaged, hey?
Yeah.
I heard that.
Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
I want your opinion of this. Let us see it, Hassan. Oh, let me know when you get it.
Yeah.
He was on his knees proposing, and not only... It was disgusting to see a man on his knees so weak like that.
So you don't like the idea of a man getting on a knee to propose?
It's not supposed to. You're not supposed to bow down to any human being.
Right.
And he bowing down to this woman, begging her to marry him, and she's going to keep him on his knees.
You know what's funny? I've actually never thought about it that way.
Yeah.
I've never thought about the submissive position that getting on your knee
is. The man's supposed to be bringing the woman into his world.
Yeah.
But when you're bowing down on your knees, you're going into her hell. And that's all you're going to ever catch in the marriage is hell.
He's going to catch hell the whole time.
Because he started out weak.
Yeah.
And not only that, this woman had been married before, according to the report, married before with children.
No, Tim Scott.
Yeah.
My man was running for president. He can't do better.
I was so happy when he got out of that race, because he's a mama's boy.
Yeah. He was saying that during the GOP debate. Was he saying, mama.
Right.
He kept saying it.
Everything about mama. Yeah. My mama's here. Me and my mama and my brother grew up in a one-bedroom house. Everything. I'm like, Lord, please don't let this guy get in.
Yeah, he was playing to it a little bit, wasn't he?
Yeah. Man, it was a mess. But I wanted to know, so what do you think about men kneeling to ask a woman to marry him?
Well, until just then, I'd never thought about it before. Really? I'd never thought about the actual act of kneeling, but it's a good point. I mean, what is there some sort of like a biblical reference to what a man's meant to do when he asks a woman to marry? I know you're meant to see the father, meant to maybe propose some sort of a gift. What is the actual biblical reference?
You know, if everything was normal the way it should be, he would go to the father, her father, and say, "Hey, I want to marry your daughter," and then he would just. Because the father is supposed to hand the daughter off to her husband, right? Because of the order of God. And so once he does that, he'll just go and tell the woman, "Hey, we're getting married, you know." Come on.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, actually, to be honest with you, like, not just because you said that, but that makes more sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's more important to get the father's approval first.
Absolutely.
And then once you've gotten the father's approval, then...
You go
come on.
Marry him. Because he's passing her. Did we find it? No, yeah. There it is. Look at that.
Going to make little caramel babies.
Oh, a mess.
Yeah.
And he want to be the president.
Rattlesnake is my boxing fighting name, Jake Rattlesnake. So there's no sort of... I'm thinking about even changing it at some point, to be honest, Jesse, because I don't want to have a snake in my name for much longer. But used to do a fighting podcast, which was boxing, MMA. This went for a few years, did about 100 episodes or so. And then I moved into more of the sort of political space during COVID, doing a bit of activism work when people were trying to make me do things that I didn't necessarily want to do,
right,
which we can't really say a lot of the time. But once that happened, then I moved into the activism work. And like I said, when I was about 25, which is about 3 years ago, started looking into, you know, Christ a little bit more, started looking into scripture a little bit more, and also started looking into the evils of the world. So that was what you might call like a red pilling experience for me.
Right on.
And then as that went on, that sort of faded out, had a little bit of a thing going on there. And then I started Rattlesnake TV in October of 2022. And I had a video... I'd been doing podcasts for years at this stage, but never earned a penny from it. And then I had a video just go really viral and found my lane a little bit and just kept on talking about the issues that I wanted to talk about. And people liked it. And now here I am in the fallen state.
I know. Amazing. I saw one of your videos where you were, I guess here, I think you were in this country, and you were going around asking people about racism.
Mm-hmm.
What did you learn or realize from that?
It affirmed what I already knew, which is that America, especially LA, where if you walk around Santa Monica Pier, where I was that day,
right,
it is what if you were a real utopian, it's what you'd define as like the melting pot, which was that people from all different races are able to sort of coexist together and not kill each other most of the time. But and then I was interviewing people and asking them if they think that America's racist. Every single one of them said yes. And it was just this amazing sort of like juxtaposition between reality and what people think.
Yeah, because, I saw that.
Yeah, because they're all saying, yeah, no, I'm oppressed. And then one of the young ladies I interviewed, I was saying, so she was saying to me, yeah, I never really thought about racism when my parents never really thought about racism either. And then I learned it in school. And I was trying to sort of subtly reinforce to her by saying, so you're telling me that you learnt racism in school. Before that, you never thought about it. She goes, yeah. And the penny just didn't drop.
Right.
So it was, yeah, it was odd. That's for sure.
Another video I saw of yours, where you were critiquing this one, Jordan Peterson.
And Michael Eric Dyson.
And Michael Eric Dyson. Mm. And the other guy that was with Jordan. What was his name?
Stephen Fry.
Yeah, Stephen Fry. We played that here, by the way.
Mm.
I have debated Michael Dyson before. And I noticed that he used big words, as you said in the video. And he speak really fast. So you don't know that he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Mm.
But I... really appreciated the way Jordan Peterson and that guy handled Michael.
Mm.
What did you think about that video? You explained it well, by the way. It was perfect.
Oh, thank you. Well, Michael Eric Dyson's a snake oil salesman, and he's just a sophistrist. So he just uses sophistry to try and like actually obfuscate the bullshit that is coming out of his mouth.
Right.
And Candace Owens, I think, said it perfectly. If you've ever seen him debate Candace Owens, Candace Owens just says, you're just using big words. You're saying big words. You're not saying anything. Say something of substance. And it's a typical intellectual, somebody who tries to make very complicated, very simple ideas very complicated.
Right.
And sort of, he's like we said before, drunk on the own fumes. He's drunk on his own fumes because he's using all these big words.
Yeah.
And he thinks that people are in awe of him. When if you actually analyze what he's saying, it's just a load of doo-doo.
Mess. I like the way that Jordan Peterson, I'm sorry, tell me the other guy's name again.
Stephen Fry.
And Stephen Fry dealt with him.
Mm.
They were not afraid of speaking up to him. They were not afraid of the word racism, because Michael kept implying that white people this and white people that and racist. But they didn't give into that at all. And I really like seeing that.
Mm. Well, I mean, I appreciate that too, because they were quite subtle about it. But I like people who are even more forward in calling it out and saying like that it's like you're actually the racist. If you want to keep on implying that, if you want to see everything through the prism of race, then this is your problem. It's not really something that I'm dealing with. I'm trying to deal with the issues on a fact basis. I'm trying to deal with them at face value.
Yeah.
But
have you heard of Race to Dinner?
Yes, I've seen some parts of it.
Oh, you have?
Yeah.
Let's play Race to Dinner, a little soundbite, and I want you to react to it. This is from movie maker Race to Dinner. It's a business in which white women pay to have dinner with Regina Jackson and Sarah Rowe, who offer blunt talk about race. Watch this movie maker.
So I want a show of hands of everyone at this table who is racist.
Oh my God. For me, race has never really been a thing.
I've always thought of myself as being like kind of woke.
I'm blinded to color. Like, it doesn't faze me at all. When we bleed red.
Because he was a white male, he was a victim of reverse racism.
I understand you have issues with us skin color, but I don't believe that's our future.
Let me ask you a question. How many of you would trade places with a black person in this society? Raise your hand.
What do you think about that?
I actually had a little bit of a theory about this. I want to know what you think about it. So when I see this and this whole anti-racist movement, what I see is people trying to come to terms with the fact that they are broken and fallen creatures and that they're beyond repair. And I think that this is an internal yearning that we all have as human beings.
Yes.
To accept the fact that we're broken and beyond repair. But they're rebels to God. And instead of admitting that we're all fallen and we're all broken, we all need to submit to God and we all need to accept the grace of Jesus, they instead will try and idolize black people. And they'll say that this is the white people are the ones who are fallen and this is our idol. But I think that internal yearning is there, and it's funny because they just need to turn their attention elsewhere. They need to plug into a church.
Absolutely, man.
Yeah.
What I don't understand, I do understand, even though I'm saying I don't, first of all, that was a dumb question, would you take the place of a black person, right? Who would want to take the place of a black person?
And like, would you want to take the place of a white person?
I'm
like,
about to say, I wouldn't even want to take the place of a white person or any person. I want my own place.
It's a risk, man.
Because
you see something and you don't know what the internal life is like. So even if I see you and you look like you've just got it all together, I wouldn't want to trade places. It's a risk.
Were you surprised to see that those white women putting themselves in that position with some dumb black woman and another, whatever she was.
Yeah.
Why were they putting himself in that position like that?
Well, because it's this self-flagellation, and this is the only reason why, like, we're able to have, like, in America, for example, you're able to have your borders invaded. Like, other countries where it's acceptable to be sort of nationalistic and to have pride in yourself. Like, if you go to Japan or South Korea and they try and tell you you're evil because you're Japanese, they will get some chopsticks and start whipping you out the building.
Really?
Like, I promise you, like, these countries are proud, and they're proud of who they are. They're proud of their history. And if they're actually, they what you'd want to call racially supremacist. And I go to those countries and I think, okay, you think you're better than me because you're Japanese? I get it. And this is why you guys have a strong culture.
Right.
But white people, for some reason, have just become so self-flagellating over the past however long. I'm not too sure, but... It doesn't surprise me to see white women doing it, but I've also had experiences in my life, especially with a certain white woman that I know that had to do the DEI training,
right.
And then she was brave enough to stick up for it. And I went in the call with her when they were doing the DEI training and trying to, like, sort of scold her about it, and she stood up to it, and they crumbled in a heartbeat. They crumbled straight away, Jesse. These people can't stand up to questioning, so...
A mess.
Yeah.
Amazing. I remember growing up, and then you want to take a call, at least one?
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah.
I remember growing up, and white people were strong. I never imagined that one day white people would be so weak and afraid to just say, no, I'm not a racist. There doesn't exist anyway. I'm not a racist. All they have to say is no. They won't even say no.
But also, I'm not a racist, but in-group preference and that does exist, though. If I say that Christian European culture, I think, is the greatest culture to ever exist, that doesn't make me a racist.
That's
that just
right.
makes me proud.
Yeah.
And it doesn't. But I think that the problem comes in when you start to pathologize the other, and that's what these women are doing. They're pathologizing white women.
Yeah.
I wouldn't pathologize black people. I would identify the problems that African Americans are facing, that Indigenous Australians are facing. I would also identify the problems that white people are facing in America, which is the fact that they're self-flagellating and that they vote for these awful, like, governors, like governor, like Gavin Newsom, you know?
Amazing. What a mess. You have a dog?
Have a dog? No, not at the moment.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, man.
We'll get to that story. Okay. Let's go to Emily, a first-time caller out of Texas. Emily, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Jesse. I've just moved here to Texas, and I just started listening to you. You make a lot of good sense, and a lot of people don't want to listen to what you have to say. They want to overtalk you and everything, but I had a few questions I wanted to ask you.
Okay.
What is the meaning of sin, and what really is sin? I'm kind of confused about that, because we're raised with certain values, and we go by that, and the church tells us certain things, and then we feel certain things are good or bad. I wanted to get your response on that.
Sin is man or woman playing God. When you think that you know what you want for yourself, when you think you can make your life work, when you judge yourself and others, you are playing God. And that's why God cannot do anything for you, because you're your own God in your mind. And that's the sin, human beings playing God.
I agree 100%. Most of my life, I've trying to find out who I am and what I am. But I've always known God. I've always known him. Even when I was 3 years old, I told my mother, I said, Mom, you know, I've had this dream that I stood up in the pew in church, and I told the priest, he did not know what he was talking about. And my mama said, yeah, you actually did that. And when I was a little girl, I would put an altar in the backyard, and I would bring the other children in the neighborhood to come and pray. And my mother said, no, you can't do that. That is wrong. And I said, but I have this feeling that I want to tell people about God. And I've done that my whole life.
Well, little children do know God. It's just that they're traumatized by their mothers, because the father doesn't protect them from their mothers. And so they forget God once they become angry. But they do know God when they're born. And that's why, as an adult, you got to come back to him. Are you married, Emily?
My husband just passed away last year.
Oh, man. So rest in peace.
do. I was extremely obedient. I was raised old-fashioned Italian. When you get married, the marriage vows say, the woman says, to honor, love, and obey. But the husband doesn't have to say that. I never really paid attention to it, but I do now.
You want to respond? Emily, let Jake respond to that. You want to respond to that?
Yeah, well, I hadn't read the marriage vows myself about to love and obey, but I think I'm Italian by culture as well.
Oh,
so,
yeah?
Yeah, it does make sense. And Italian women can be good, but unfortunately, if you go there now, there's a little color revolution going on, and the feminism is very strong in Italy. Yes. So we got to bring it back.
Amazing.
Well,
did you obey your husband, Emily?
Yes. He was my lord and master, and that's how I was brought up. He wanted to marry. He wanted to marry an Italian. He wanted to marry because his parents felt that that was right. I had a chaperone until I was engaged to get married. I had a chaperone. Girls today need chaperones.
Yeah.
But my mama taught me, your husband is your lord and master. He puts food on your table, puts a roof over your house, and you know, takes care of you. You have to take care of him. And I did obey, let him take control of the money, take control of everything, you know. I felt that was the right thing to do up until the day he died.
Right on. Amazing. That is amazing.
Thank you. I think more women would be a whole lot more settled and happy today if they would do that. But I see a lot of angry women.
Yeah.
You know, don't know where the heck they belong.
They're yearning for their fathers. That's what's wrong. They want, they're yearning for the father. And that's what men are supposed to do, is to bring them back to have that godly love. God and Christ, Christ and man, and they would bring the women back to their natural state of being. Emily, thank you for your call. Will you call me again?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, Jesse, for what the work that you're doing.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
What I want to do before we end here is get you and Joel. You know who Joel is?
Who?
Joel, he black.
No, I don't. this is Joel.
Yeah, let's see Joel picture up there with his show.
How are you, man?
Good.
With his advertised for his show. Joel Friday TV.
Yes, sir. Joel.
You don't have it. Okay. This is Joel Friday. See? He's a part of our
very nice
network we're building. He black.
is Obama black, Jesse?
No.
No?
Obama white.
Why?
I got
He's
a little white
and black.
I got a little white.
But this is Joel, and he's on our network here. He worked here as well.
Yeah. And nice to meet you, Joel.
You too, man.
You got a show on the network as well?
Yeah. I just started about a year ago. So
beautiful. If you're ever struggling for a guest, need a replacement, you let me know. I'll jump in there.
Good to know.
Had you heard of Jake before today?
No, this is the first time I've... the first time I heard about
right
it.
On.
Yeah.
So what I want to do is play this soundbite about dogs.
I don't have headphones, though, so...
Where are your headphones?
They disappeared.
Hank, where are your headphones?
What dog?
I know. Amazing. He said, ask Bill, not me.
What?
So you're not able to hear then.
But we can... if somebody wants to bring the headphones that are out there in here.
That's the anchor, baby, Jake.
You need to hear them, too.
Jake, don't get that man your... Jake, don't get that man your headset.
Is there a place to plug it in there?
Yeah. Yeah, we got
it. I think you have to have these ones.
No, we'll plug it over here.
No, plug it right under the table there. Nick, come and show him where to plug it.
I've got one here.
Oh, okay. I see what happened. I'll just see what happens.
Oh.
We got it, yeah.
That was in the wrong plug.
Okay.
Okay, we got it.
We found it.
Boom.
Amazing.
Amazing. Okay. First of all, did you know that dogs get depressed?
I've seen depressed dogs.
You have?
I've seen depressed dogs. Yeah.
Well, watch this. New York Post. Multiple things can trigger the onset of dog depression.
And you know they can get antidepressants now.
What?
They can get antidepressants now.
Pills?
Dogs. Pills. I promise you can put it in the dog's food.
What? Oh, Lord.
Big pharma.
Studies have shown that dogs can experience depression and anxiety. Why is this from CBS?
Well, I don't think they've forgiven
them. What about the dog's well-being? Turns out they suffer from depression and anxiety just as much as we do.
So everybody can tell you about how your dog knows when you're in a bad mood and knows how to, like, come and cheer you up. But unfortunately, we're not as good at reading them.
Nearly 75% of dogs show signs of depression or anxiety, with 18% showing symptoms every week. However, only about a third of owners recognize those signals.
The main things to look out for are disinterest in things that they used to be interested in, going off their food. So you can look at their little faces. If they're kind of lip licking a lot, if they're yawning a lot, that's kind of a sign of immediate stress.
Experts predicted a surge in poor pet mental health after the pandemic.
While you're out for a walk, why don't you make it not just a physical walk for them, but like a mentally stimulating walk?
Researchers say that extra mental boost for your fur baby could improve your health too.
What do you think about that?
Wow, I mean, imagine you're a dog, Jesse, and you've got some lady who's your master, and she's carrying you around in a little handbag all day. Or imagine you're a big Rottweiler who wants to run around, and somebody's keeping you in like a little tiny backyard.
Right.
You'd be depressed, too.
Amazing. Good point, man.
Yeah.
And you say?
What a mess. No, there's like reasons why it's actually the owners who are weakening the dogs, like he's saying.
Right.
By putting them in these clothes and like babying them, putting them in a stroller, it's not letting the dog's nature be a dog.
You ever seen a single mother with a dog? I know this single mother who has a dog, right? And it's just, you know what happens when the single mothers, like the men discipline their dogs and the dogs become obedient. But when the single mothers have a dog, they try and talk to them with like love and affection. So when they do something wrong, they'll be like, "Oh, it's okay." And that if you don't discipline a dog, then they just become reckless.
Yeah.
You know? It's like a young lady who doesn't have her father around, you know? Once that happens, then it just never stops. And the dog will just climb up on the table, eat all the food.
Yeah.
Good point, man.
Yeah. And the dogs also don't reject it. They're not gonna reject it and be like, "This is too much." They love it. So their nature is gonna change because of it.
Because they like the attention. But dogs don't get depressed. I'm telling you. Dogs don't feel anything. It's just a human being that has not overcome. They're in an animal-like state. And so they have all these feelings and thoughts and feelings. And they think that the dog is feeling what they're feeling, and they're not.
Mm. I think the word depression, it might be something different, but you definitely get dogs who are, like, uncomfortable by their lives. And they've got, you know, bad parents, bro.
Jay, tell the people your website, how to find you and everything.
Rattlesnake TV on YouTube, Instagram, Jake Rattle SNK, Rattlesnake Rattle SNK, and same with Twitter. And that's where you can find me.
Amazing. Thank you, man, for coming by.
Always a pleasure.
And you're welcome here anytime.
Thank you, brother. Next time I'm in LA, I'll hit you up again.
Right on.
Another chat.
And have a safe trip.
Nice.